more.
Glorious day, fellow traveler. Welcome to Science and God with Dr. G. That's me, Dr. Michael Gillen, physicist, astronomer, mathematician, and Christian. That's right, living, breathing evidence that science and Christianity are not mortal enemies, but good friends. Actually, an awesome power couple. If you take a long, broad look at human history, at our history, one trend is unmistakable. Over the years, little by little, we've systematically insulated ourselves from the natural world. More than that, we've conquered the natural world, mostly in the name of progress, of making our lives better. But here's the question. Has our science and technology truly improved nature, improved our lives? Or have they made things worse? And what does the Bible have to say about all this? Well, that's what today's journey is all about. So let's get started. This is going to be a good one. If you go back thousands of years to, say, the Stone Age, okay, we had a very, very different relationship with the natural world than we do today. We look to nature for everything. And because of that, I imagine we felt a certain gratitude for it all. You know, we hunted and gathered foods in nature, birds, fish, rabbits, berries, and so forth. And we cooked our food over natural wood fires. We used animal skins for clothing and lived in natural caves or in simple shelters by rivers and lakes. You know, our crude technology amounted to building teepees or huts using natural materials and shaping stones or bones into tools and weapons. And that was it. So can't even hardly call that technology. Now, at the end of the Stone Age, we discovered ways to plant our own food. That was a big deal. We became farmers. We also learned how to build and sew. So our shelters and clothing did become more advanced. And this, we can say, is when we just started divorcing ourselves from the unadulterated natural world. This is when we began, if you will, maybe it's too strong a way to put it, but it's really when we began thumbing our nose at the natural world. Why? Because we could now grow our own food and better protect ourselves from the natural elements. But even so, we still used tools, seeds, and building materials, think about it, from the wild, from the natural world. So we still valued the natural world and felt indebted to it. Sure, the natural world frightened us, no question about that. And, you know, today we look back and laugh at our Stone Age relatives because they cowered at the sound of thunder or the sight of lightning. Ha, 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 we say, ha, ha, ha. What silly, superstitious creatures we were back then. We're so much smarter now. Okay, I'll come back to that point in a minute. But, you know, hold on, hold on. Let me ask you a simple but important question at this point. Sure, our ancestors feared the natural world, and maybe that would want to make us laugh a little bit at them. But was that an entirely bad thing? Was it an entirely bad thing that our ancestors feared the natural world? Now, before you answer, think about what the Bible says in Proverbs 9:10. Quote, "Fear of the Lord is the foundation of what? Wisdom. Knowledge of the Holy One results in good judgment," unquote. That word fear is all important, my friend. Why? Because it implies respect. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, respect. According to the Bible, in other words, when you fear something or someone, it means you respect the power and authority of that something or someone. Okay? It's like having the jitters when you go on live TV in front of millions of people. I know that feeling well. You know, after decades of being on national television, I still get a knot in my stomach when I do live TV. Yeah, believe it or not. I still fear its power and authority of possibly, you know, I fear possibly getting tongue-tied or worse, saying something I'll regret. Let me put it another way. I still respect the power and authority of stepping in front of a TV camera and broadcasting live to people all over the world. I fear and respect that power and authority. Okay? Let me give you another example of what the Bible means by fear. This is really important, so I'm going to dwell on it just a little bit. Over the years, I've covered scores of natural disasters. If you've been following these journeys, you know that. And I often joke that I've had a disastrous career because of that. You know, I've covered everything from mudslides and volcanoes to hurricanes and tornadoes, you name it. So not only do I know a whole lot about natural disasters, but I also know firsthand how people react to them. Okay. For example, hurricanes. They're deadly for lots of reasons, right? They begin without warning, you know, out of the blue, boom. Their trajectories are difficult to predict, and their winds and rainfall are dangerously powerful. But there's another reason why hurricanes are deadly. Human folly, okay? People build their houses close to the water along shorelines routinely battered by hurricanes. Go figure. Okay. People don't evacuate when told to do so. Go figure. People run out to the end of a pier. And I've seen this so many times. People will run out to the end of a pier at a beach where a hurricane, a powerful, deadly hurricane is forecast to hit. It's like bullseye. And they party there while waiting for the storm to arrive. They're called hurricane parties. And they almost always end badly. In short, what I'm saying is too many people today do not fear, they do not respect the awesome power of a hurricane. They do not fear, they do not respect the tremendous power and authority of the natural world. Were they to do so, the death and destruction from hurricanes alone would be greatly, greatly reduced, maybe even eliminated if you think about it. So yeah, go ahead and laugh all you want about how dumb and superstitious and fearful our Stone Age ancestors were. But at least they were smart enough not to dance and party in the face of a hurricane, okay? They were smart enough to take shelter. So give them some credit. So really, when you think about it, let's be honest, who's smarter, them or us? I'll let you think about that. Following the Stone Age, our species matriculated to the Bronze Age. Hello, starting about 5,000 years ago. This is when, for example, the Egyptian pyramids were built, pictographs were invented, you know, like hieroglyphics, and the earliest books of the Bible were recorded. So it was an important age. And this is also when we discovered the wheel, woven fabrics, and the biggie. We discovered how to make bronze, which is a combination of copper and tin. Okay. Now, because of bronze, we could make weapons and tools much harder and deadlier than natural materials like stone and bones. Okay, suddenly, nature's stones and bones, for which we had been so grateful so long, became inferior to our clever invention. And as a result of that, we lost still more of our dependence on the natural world, and inevitably, therefore, we lost still more of our fear of and respect for it as well. Now, didn't stop there, because after the Bronze Age came the Iron Age, starting about 3,000 years ago. This, my friend, is when we discovered how to smelt iron. And because it was easier to do than making bronze, we suddenly had the ability to mass produce tools and weapons made of steel. That was a very big deal. And this is also, by the way, when we started building sophisticated houses with more than just one room. We take multi-room houses for granted. No. This is when we started building those kinds of houses. And this is also when we started, building well laid out cities and neighborhoods of tract homes with rudimentary plumbing. Yes. All of these clever technologies, my friend, represented huge declarations of independence from the natural world. That's really what they amounted to. And they also amounted to huge boosts to our egos, which means we lost still more of our fear of and respect for the power and authority of the natural world. Okay, forget hunting and gathering foods in the wild. Forget living in cold, damp, natural caves. Forget shaping stones and bones. The Iron Age puffed us up and made us feel that we were smarter than the natural world, that we could do better than God, that we could improve on His creation. Really, that's what it amounted to. And in the ages that followed, our hubris skyrocketed. The scientific age, the industrial age, the electric age, the space age, the computer age, and now the artificial intelligence age. They've all convinced us that we are indeed smarter than God, that we can create a better world than He did, a paradise, a creation 2.0, even more idyllic than the Garden of Eden. Okay? Because of these many ages of so-called human progress, because of our many impressive, and they are impressive, scientific and technological achievements, today, our fear of and respect for the natural world is at the lowest level it's ever been in human history. Today, all that fear and respect we once had for God's creation and God Himself is now directed at our science and technology. Sure, Christians, for one, are still called to fear and respect God. Christians are still called to believe that fearing and respecting God is the foundation of wisdom, just as the Bible explains. Not just intelligence, by the way. I'm talking wisdom. The Bible is talking wisdom here. And yes, Christians are still called to believe that, quote, I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength, unquote. Yes, all that is true, but today, many people sincerely believe that God and the Bible belong in the Stone Age. They believe that we as a species can do everything through science and technology, which improve us. And this belief is especially popular among young people, and it's not surprising. I have a Gen Z son, and his generation have grown up not reading the Bible or taking God seriously, but witnessing the seeming miracles of science and technology, miracles that were once attributed to God alone. Today, science and technology is helping the blind to see. I myself have done many stories about how retinal implants can partially restore the sight of people with macular degeneration. That's a big deal. Today, science and technology is helping the lame to walk. In my book, The End of Life as We Know It, I describe how neural prosthetics and computer-controlled exoskeletons are helping amputees and paralytics regain some movement and independence. That's a miracle. Today, science and technology is helping barren couples to have children. Now, it didn't work for Laurel and me, but artificial insemination, surrogacy, and many other techniques are making it possible for millions of infertile people all over the world to have babies. So then, my friend, has all this man-made cleverness, have all these man-made technologies, miraculous technologies, made our lives better? Are we better off by not fearing or respecting the natural world? Well, in many ways, the answer is yes, of course. You know, in his book, Enlightenment Now, Harvard psychologist Steven Pinker argues that as a whole, you know, all things considered, we are better fed, better educated, and in better health than ever before. In fact, he goes so far as to claim that in all ways that matter, our species have never had it so good. That's what he says. Pinker has been rightfully accused of looking at modern life through rose-colored glasses, you know, of fudging the data and of ignoring critical aspects of life that, you know, cannot easily be quantified, you know, in data. In short, he's been accused, and I think rightfully so, of hyping the positives and downplaying the negatives. But even so, there is no question that in certain ways we are much better off now than we were back in the Stone Age. I wouldn't want to trade places, let's put it this way, with one of my Stone Age relatives, okay? But, and this, my friend, is the heart and soul of today's journey. So it's important you listen carefully. Whatever progress we've made since the Stone Age, and we have, it's come at a very steep price. Just look around you. As you know, I was born and reared in Los Angeles, okay? And on some days, I remember the smog was so bad that when you tried taking a deep breath, you literally gagged, you know, like it, and you'd gag. It was a horrible feeling. And on really bad days, we kids were excused from school. Now, we were happy about it, but now I look back and I'm like, oy, oy, oy. You know, they call them smog days. And that was bad enough, but now it's even worse. Today, kids are being excused from school because they have extreme anxiety about life. They call them mental health days. No kidding. And it's no wonder, you know, my son's Gen Z generation is being devastated. There's no other word for it. Devastated by record levels of loneliness, depression, and suicide. And much of it is directly attributable to our technology, in particular to social media. And it's not just Twitter and TikTok that is so unnerving, that is so dangerous. You know, consider the following breathtaking technologies that now pass for progress, okay? In a previous age, we bred existing animals for the traits we prefer, okay? Traditional breeding. Today, we have the ability to create entirely novel creatures, including chimeras that are part human and part sheep. I talk about that in my book, The End of Life as We Know It. In a previous age, we created machines to help us with our heavy labor, and that was a good thing. Today, we're creating machines to replace us altogether. In a previous age, we lit up our homes with electrical power, and that was wonderful. Today, we can snuff out an entire city with nuclear power. And that's not all. There are other things I remember about growing up in Los Angeles. For example, never experiencing a truly dark night. Imagine that. You know, even when I turned off my bedroom lamp and went to bed, light poured into my room from street lamps, or the house next door, or the headlights of cars coming and going at all hours of the night. You know, the very first time I ever experienced true darkness, I'll never forget, the very first time I ever saw stars in the night sky was in high school. I was already a teenager, probably 16 or 17 years old. During a weekend, my best friends and I drove out to the Mojave Desert and camped there overnight. I guess I must have been at least 18 years old then because we drove. Okay, so there you go. It was amazing, and I'll never forget it. The stars looked close enough to grab. And the Milky Way, whoa, which I'd never seen before in my life. Wow. It looked like a wide river of light flowing right over our heads from horizon to horizon, like an incandescent river. And today, sadly, light pollution all over the electrified world is so bad, that many of our best optical telescopes have been rendered useless. They're being blinded by city lights. You know, the way you're blinded when driving at night and a car comes at you with its high beams on. And that's still not all. Growing up in Los Angeles, I was constantly surrounded by noise. It was impossible to get away from it. And the problem isn't unique to LA, don't get me wrong. Meet Gordon Hempton, okay? He's an acoustic ecologist and the co-founder of a nonprofit called Quiet Parks International, or QPI. Check out the link in my show notes. It's a fascinating organization. Let me tell you, for roughly 40 years, Hempton has traveled all over the planet looking for what? Outdoor spots that are free of man-made noises. Yeah? Places where you can actually hear birds chirping or brooks babbling or trees swaying in the wind without also hearing car horns or airplanes or jackhammers. You know, back when Hempton was a young man and when he was starting his search, he had no trouble finding naturally quiet places. But those days are gone. For example, and this is really kind of a sad example, but it typifies the situation we're in today. Back in 2005, okay, Hempton found what he called the quietest place in the United States. It was in the Hoh Valley, and spelled H-O-H. It's located in Northwest Washington State, smack in the middle of the tallest forest in the world. The giant sequoias there are covered with moss, so they act like soundproof curtains. It's a pretty amazing place. Today, however, a nearby naval base simulates dogfights 6 times a day right over the Hoh Valley. So now, Hempton's once quietest place in the United States is actually one of the noisiest places in the world. According to Hempton's organization, QPI, quiet is now nearly extinct. Sadly, it says, quote, 90% of children will not experience natural quiet during their lifetime, unquote. Today, if you want peace and quiet, you have to lock yourself inside a closet and put on a really good pair of noise-canceling headphones. But even then, it's not at all like nature's version of peace and quiet, is it? Not at all. It's actually one of the reasons Laurel and I now prefer living in the country. You know, although even in the country, nowadays, the wonderful sounds and pleasures of nature are frequently polluted by the sounds and sights of lawnmowers, chainsaws, automobiles, you name it. You know, so I'm from LA. Laurel is originally from New York. We love living in the country, but even here, it's not perfectly quiet. So there you have it, my friend. This is what progress looks and feels and sounds like. This is what it looks and feels and sounds like to be free of the natural world, of not fearing or respecting it as we once did. Yes, of course, the natural world can be scary, no question about it. But even scarier is a species that has a whole lot of power and very little wisdom, a whole lot of hubris and very little fear of or respect for God's magnificent creation. Today, you know, there's a lot of heated talk about climate change, about whether we are at all, a little, or a lot to blame for it. It's an important issue to discuss, but truthfully, the climate is a complex dynamic system that never stops changing. And over the history of the Earth, it has changed radically many times over. I think I've dealt with this in a previous journey. What is new? What is unprecedented? What deserves more attention than it's getting? Is what we've done to the planet, to God's creation. In a word, we've trashed it, like, you know, someone's living room after a big drunken party. And the evidence of our abuse is everywhere, isn't it? For example, by land. Since the Stone Age, we've destroyed roughly 80% of Earth's forests. For example, the island of Madagascar, once known for its magnificent rainforest, 90% of it is now gone. It's been leveled by logging, charcoal making, and slash-and-burn rice farming. As a result, some of God's most unique plants and animals have been totally destroyed along with the rainforest. By sea, now floating on our oceans, are massive islands of plastic trash. Water bottles, tampon holders, plastic bags, you name it. They're created by rotating ocean currents, gyres we call them, that corral trash from the surrounding nations into these floating rafts of junk. One of them in the Pacific Ocean right now, one of them alone is about twice the size of Texas. By air, birds, bees, butterflies, and many, many flying insects are dying off. Why? Because of corporate farming, the skyrocketing abuse of chemical repellents, and most of all, urban development. Like in the Joni Mitchell song, we paved paradise and put up a parking lot. Lots of them, not just one. Look, you don't have to be a fanatical environmentalist to be brokenhearted at the huge price we've paid for our alleged progress. The price we're paying right now for not fearing and respecting the natural world. For believing that we could improve on God's creation. You know, it calls to my mind the Bible's warning about the steep price of hubris. Quote, pride goes before destruction and haughtiness before a fall, unquote. So then, my friend, is there any hope of our species ever recovering a healthy fear of and respect for the natural world? Yes. And here's one example of why I say that. In recent years, a new scientific discipline has become enormously popular. It's called bio-inspiration. What is it? It's our puffed-up modern species suddenly discovering that, wow, the natural world actually has important lessons to teach us. Imagine that. We've discovered that by studying how plants and animals are designed, we can learn ways of inventing technologies that are not only nature-inspired, bio-inspired, in other words, but nature-friendly. Let me give you some quick examples of what I mean. First, burrs, you know, those little burrs that stick to your socks when you're walking in tall weeds, for example, they inspired the design of Velcro. Shark skin, for example, has a very special texture that repels bacteria naturally, not chemically, naturally. So by mimicking this texture in the lab, scientists are now creating antibacterial surfaces that can be used in hospitals. And one last example, porcupine quills have specially designed barbs. By mimicking them in the lab, scientists at MIT and elsewhere are creating surgical staples that aren't so prone to causing infections in the wounds they bind together. Isn't that amazing? And I could give you many, many more examples, but you get the idea. This, I believe, is an encouraging development, not just because it's producing some very impressive inventions. It's encouraging because it represents a reversal a huge reversal of the devastating trend that has dogged our history. The science of bioinspiration, the science of biomimicry, is forcing us to reconsider our abusive marriage to God's creation. It's forcing us to respect, once again, the power and authority of the natural world. It's forcing us to think twice now about being so full of ourselves. Wow, I love it. Respect, wisdom, humility. More than ever before, these are the three traits our species desperately needs to rediscover. And guess what? We won't learn these traits by reading science and technology textbooks. Oh no. But you will if you read the Bible. Respect, wisdom, humility. These are precisely the traits the Bible celebrates and encourages, my friend. These are the traits that keep us from becoming too smart for our own good.
Okay, that's it for now. Remember, this podcast is not a lecture series. It's a conversation. So now it's your turn. Comments, questions? I'm eager to hear from you. There's all kinds of ways you can connect up with me via my social media links in the show notes below. Till next time, I'm still Dr. G saying, I love science, I love God, I also love you, my fellow traveler. Thanks for listening.